Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Live Dharma Sunday. This is Reverend Koyo Kubose here, and I'm so glad everyone has joined us. Yeah, it's entering into the winter holiday season. Every season has a special atmosphere and a lot of things happening in everyone's lives. Life keeps rolling along. Well, today's guest for giving a Dharma glimpse is Cheryl Geo Cornegay of Wake Forest, North Carolina. And she was part of our LM2, or Lay Minister 2 group, that completed their studies in May of 2009. And every different individuals, you know, we all have different commonalities and different connections. And for Cheryl Geo Sensei, living in Wake Forest area, Adrian and I lived in Greensboro, North Carolina for 5 years, where I was teaching there at the University of North Carolina. And so we know the area very well, the Piedmont Triangle area, and it's a beautiful area of the country. You get your nice seasons, not too severe, but you get good seasons. We planted a dogwood tree. When we were hiking in the woods, we found a thin, small 3-foot sapling of a dogwood tree. And some 20 years later, when we were driving on a driving trip, we stopped by and looked at that tree in the old neighborhood, and it's a huge, maybe a 30, 40 foot tree with loaded with dogwood, beautiful blossoms. And we remember very fondly both of our two boys, our sons were born in at the Moses Cone Hospital in Greensboro. We used to take many trips, just go west a little bit to the Blue Ridge Mountains, or we could go east to the Atlantic Ocean, the Outer Banks, which was a beautiful, very wild, nice, natural coast there. And I also understand, maybe we'll get a little bit of an update, but I know that Cheryl and her family was adopting a little bit of a back to the land lifestyle, raising chickens and different things, and both being retired and being on a very wooded 5-acre property here in Central California, we were living in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, and we're really enjoying the mountain living. We have a huge garden, and we're in with a lot of wildlife here. So I was reminded of that. Well, without further ado, for today's Dharma Glimpse, Cheryl Geo Sensei.
Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for having me here today. I'm going to go ahead and apologize for my voice. I had the wonderful opportunity with my father and stepmother, and we talked until late until the night, so my voice is a little tired. North Carolina is beautiful right now. We just had a couple of inches of snow. It's raining, so all of our snow is gone, but we all had a good time playing out in the snow. We usually get a few inches for just a little while during the year, and then it disappears. And it's nothing like the deep snow that people up north or out in the Midwest get, but we like it. My farm went pretty well. We didn't keep the animals. They were being really stressed out by the neighbor's dogs. And but we did do very well with the gardens this year, especially the flower and herb garden and the little wildlife sanctuary that flourished. Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about just my experience as a mother during the winter holiday season and some things that I've observed, particularly this year. My children are getting older. My daughter's 10. My son's about to turn 8. And I feel like they're starting to want to understand the mythology of the season a little bit better. And as a mother, I often feel like my children are missing out on having a spiritual life, and they're getting left behind culturally and left out culturally. And I think that's in large part just because of the way I defined my own spiritual life through the experiences that I had as a child and how very different those experiences are from what my children are getting now. Even though I so often felt at odds with it, my childhood spiritual life revolved heavily around ritual and myth, and specifically the ritual and myth of the Catholic and the Episcopal kinds. Both denominations followed highly structured masses, and they were very rich in symbolism and stories. And so in a Buddhist household, our family doesn't revolve around ritual and perpetuation of myth and that type of structure. It was easy as I grew older to think that the religions of my parents had no influence or had very little influence on my personal spiritual life because the particulars of their religion didn't resonate with me. But now that I'm a parent, I kind of see that my 10-year-old and my 8-year-old seem to kind of crave their own little spiritual rituals and usually invent little impromptu things that they do. So I see how much the mythology of my childhood shaped how I prefer and interpret the experiences of spirituality today. And nowhere do I think this is more apparent than during the winter holiday season. And of course, during this season, most of America takes part in some type of wider ritual and wider mythology during this part of the year. Christmas trees go up, menorahs come out, nativity scenes appear, stockings are hung by the chimney with care, and let's not forget the rituals of holiday movies, music, big family dinners, and gift giving. Well, I was out driving with my daughter, and I noted a hint of bitterness when she observed an overzealous and kind of tacky yard display. But she said, "Well, at least it's not a nativity scene." And her comment gave me pause because I thought, why would she think that way? I know that in school she catches a fair amount of flack from her Southern Baptist friends who think she's going to hell and don't mind telling her so. And so this time of year I think it must seem that most of her world celebrates the Christian Christmas and they believe something that she doesn't. So I feel like maybe she feels even more different and even more on the outside than usual this time of year. Because it's not that she celebrates a different holiday like she might say for her Jewish friends, it's that she celebrates kind of no religious holiday, just the bare bones of Christmas. So it kind of bothers me that from this point of view, she can't appreciate the beautiful aspects of the nativity story. So I used that opportunity that she presented to talk to her about the story and how it relates to the other winter holiday myths. So the season is an ideal time to think deeply about gratefulness and generosity and about hope and the cycle of life and death and rebirth. Joseph Campbell says that myth is like a mandala. It provides a field in which to locate ourselves and by which to understand the world. He says that a person with no myths at all is like being in a labyrinth, which is like a scrambled up mandala through which one has to fight their way as if no one has ever passed that way before. So as an adult who kind of came from a Catholic and Episcopal household, I have a template for understanding the broader myth of the winter holidays. Even though I might not agree with the particulars of my family's version of the myth, but I do feel like it helped me have an appreciation for the way that kind of underlying winter myth is shaped in various cultures and in various spiritualities and the different forms that it does take. Joseph Campbell says in his book, Pathways to Bliss, that traditionally the first function of a living myth is to reconcile consciousness to the preconditions of its own existence, that is to say, the nature of life. It's a reconciliation that occurs with gratitude, with love, and with recognition of the sweetness. Through the bitterness and pain, the primary experience at the core of life is a sweet and wonderful thing. This affirmative view comes pouring in through terrific rites and myths. And I feel like culturally, the Christmas season, or the winter season, is the most significant of these kind of rites that are shared by the general culture at large. So it's important, I think, to let children in on the mythologies and the rites, even if we don't believe in the particulars. And by that, I don't mean tell children the nativity story, but kind of explain the different religious beliefs that center around the holidays and different things that they're seeing and how those different things relate to each other and how they might be able to relate to them without feeling like a complete outsider. So to do this, I feel like we should foster religious understanding. My daughter, for instance, I shouldn't let her feel bitter or feel like an outsider. And as her mother, it's my responsibility to help give her a mandala instead of a labyrinth. So at the root of the common mythology, that is the Yule season, the winter season, everyone's mythology kind of echoes Joseph Campbell's function in mythology. It's a season about gratitude, about love, and recognition of that. So that life contains suffering, the core of it is a sweet and wonderful thing. So to give my children a rite that's kind of all their own, we created sort of a style of Advent wreath, and we decorate it with things from nature. My daughter has this really neat little, she loves nature and natural things, so she has this little deer skull that she really likes, so we added that to the wreath, and we added rocks and shells and one or two little animal figures. And at dinner, we light a candle and we talk about the various myths of the season. And I think it's also a good time to look at the things that do appeal to children, especially if you have children in your life, the different Christmas stories that come on, the different Christmas carols, and those all provide talking opportunities. And not just sit down and lecture your children and say, hello, kids, today I'm going to give you a lesson in world mythology, but to just use the opportunities when they're saying how much they like a song, or they're talking about, oh, it was so sad when Santa did this, and with the orphans in this movie, to use those opportunities to kind of explore greater details that we as Buddhists believe and how they relate to the greater ideas of the season itself. So I think it's an important time and a really good time to foster in them a deeper understanding of the season, to appreciate in a way that other spiritual paths express the same basic sentiments of gratitude, charity, hope, and the cycle of life. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, this is a very timely topic for this winter holiday season, and especially when for families, I think this is something that is a very important aspect as Buddhism assimilates into a culture that has a lot of Judeo-Christian roots. And that's why I kind of want to reiterate perhaps and use Cheryl Geosensis' Dharma Glimpse as a springboard for this timely topic about holidays. And in recent years, it has struck me that, you know, when we talk about Buddhism in America, we have to, what I call, well, piggyback on the holidays that we observe in the United States and integrate it with personal spirituality and Buddhist Dharma teachings. Because for everybody, you know, an atmosphere is created around a holiday. And especially for children, they get excited. You go to the mall or TV, everything is geared up. Of course, it's geared up because of the commercial connection. But along with that, there's a lot of good messages. You know, gratitude for Thanksgiving and spirit of giving and so forth for the winter holidays. And it goes right along with being American in the sense that there is a lot of diversity and pluralism in the different religious traditions and different ethnic traditions, for that matter, around these different holidays too. So it's a very opportune time to integrate. And, you know, Halloween or Independence Day, they have, the theme is broad enough so that it could be integrated with Buddhist teachings. For the winter holidays, I was thinking, you know, when we were growing up, we always had a Christmas tree, and our parents, I think, made a conscious decision not to exclude us from the broader cultural excitements. We hung up stockings, you know. And in fact, that was such a strong family tradition that we hung up our stockings long after we knew that it wasn't Santa. We didn't have a fireplace, so we pinned our stocking at the foot of our bed on the bed cover. And I remember as a child, since we didn't have a fireplace or a chimney, before I went to bed, I went and checked to make sure the front door wasn't locked because I wanted Santa to come in. Later on, after we sort of demythologized the literalness of Santa Claus, maybe I was about, you know, pre-adolescent age, and I knew my parents, my mom did it, and I wanted to catch her in the act, and as a joke, I would spring up out of bed and say, "Aha, catch you putting something in my stocking that's pinned at the foot of my bed," and have a nice joke. But I never could catch her, and I even put a bowl of ice water with a washcloth in my bed so that I could keep my face, wash my face and try to keep awake during the night, but I always fell asleep, and then I'd wake up in the morning and say, "Oh, I fell asleep. Doggone, I'm going to have to wait a whole year before I try to catch her in the act." But sure enough, in my stocking were all kind of little goodies. These kinds of moments, I think, are precious childhood memories. And somehow we should take advantage of this excitement and integrate it with Dharma teachings. And American Dharma holidays, we don't have, in addition to the regular religious holidays, the Buddhist religious holidays of Buddha's birth and enlightenment, passing away, and so forth, we should observe together as families, integrated with the regular national holidays, and creatively get our own family rituals and so forth. And then that would become part of the karmic roots of those growing up in those formative years. And this is going on right now. And we should sort of, not exactly systematize it, but make it a ritual. Okay? And the great thing about it is that there's a room for a lot of creativity for individual families to create things. And someone brought to my attention how Buddhists enjoy the holiday season. And since Bodhi Day in the Mahayana tradition is in early December, it's a natural confluence there. And if families, instead of celebrating with a Christmas tree, they could have a Bodhi tree. And when on the internet, there's a lot of information. People are sharing a lot, and what they're doing in their families. And it could give us a lot of good ideas. And I'm looking at an article right here about one family that seeing Buddhism and Bodhi Day, enjoying the holiday season, and giving very details about how their family, how they did it. Got a little small Bodhi tree. You know, you could get Bodhi tree seeds and grow your own Bodhi tree plant. It's a Indian, I think there's different scientific names for it, but I've heard it's called an Indian peepal tree, P-I-P-A-L. It has a very distinctive leaf shape, and which we use in our Bright Dawn logo, actually. But I'm sure I've known people who have ordered seeds and grown their own Bodhi plants So you could have a house plant and you could use it as the point of focus, maybe put a little Buddha statue underneath it. And then if you have children, you would do certain rituals, including, of course, gift giving and all kinds of things, which would make it a very festive ritual, not necessarily heavy into, you know, a Buddhist teachings for the young children, okay? But make it a time that a positive experience for the children. So I think this is a very something that we should really take to heart, and I know that I have to smile at all the creativity that some of our lay ministers share in their own email communications to each other, and of course they copy over to Bright Dawn, and we hear all their chatter, and they talk about bodhisattvas. Instead of the word bodhisattva, it's a bodhisanta. You know, it's a kind of a play on words for the season. And I remember myself, which I thought was, to me, a very clever thing. It was just a personal thing, but do you know that there's a Daruma doll in Japanese culture? It's a Daruma doll is a pear-shaped doll, red, big eyes, and no arms or legs. But when you knock it over, it rights itself because it's weighted on the bottom, sort of like a bobo doll you punch and it always comes up. Well, that Daruma doll in Japanese culture signifies resilience, endurance. No matter how many times you get knocked over, you right yourself up. You know, and there's a saying that says, 7 times over, 8 times up. And so it's a cultural thing, and it's actually based in Buddhist literature about Bodhidharma, who was the first patriarch of Zen Buddhism, who, as the story goes, he brought the Zen tradition from India to China, and he sat in a cave for 9 years facing a wall, and he very severe practice, aesthetic practice, and he sat for so long his arms and legs fell off. And all this, you know, mythology about it. But Daruma doll is based upon, has its roots in that aspect. So there's an educational, historical educational aspect involved here. But as a figure, he's always colored red. And I remember Dharma school, Sunday school children, they call it Dharma school in a lot of American Buddhist temples that have Sunday services. So they said Dharma school children, and they would draw part of their class activities. They would draw a Dharma and color it red. And there's all kinds of associations, cultural associations about it. 2 big eyes with no pupils in there, and then you're supposed to, whenever an adult or a family embarks on a big project, they would fill in 1 pupil in 1 eye. And when they finish the project, or it even could be they're getting their college education, or they successfully completed something, then they would fill in the other eye, you know. And it has the idea of encouragement, resilience, endurance, you know, perseverance, 7 times down, 8 times up during when you're working on a hard task and so forth. But you know, then when we were in Japan, there was we learned a lot about the local culture. And part of the local religious culture, we lived pretty close to Daitokuji, which was a large Zen, Rinzai Zen monastery. And part of their practice for the monks was takuhatsu, they call it, which might be translated as begging. But begging, it was a particular kind of spiritual practice or ritual. They would walk through the neighborhood and solicit donations from the neighborhood people. It's a way for humility, cultivate humility. It's a way for common people to have the satisfaction of giving and supporting a worthwhile cause, you know. So it has benefit on both sides. It's not like the usual term of a homeless person begging, you know. And so it's a monk might be walking in your neighborhood, and they have a rakusu, which is a sort of a bib, large bib that's around their neck, and they would come through the neighborhood, and to let people know that they're in the neighborhood, they would chant a syllable called Ho, H-O. And in the Japanese language, Dharma is called Ho. You know, Buddha is Butsu. Dharma, for the three treasures, is Ho. And Sangha is So, S-O, you know. And Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. But they would chant this sound of Ho as they walked along. Ho. Then you might hear the sound, and then you'd come out to your gate, and maybe you would have a coin, and then he would stop. You would gassho to each other. He would hold up his rakusu bib out, and you put deposit the coin in there. Okay. And he would be wearing this straw hat, so you don't see his face. It's not a social thing, so you don't make eye contact. But you make your donation in there, you gassho to each other, you're thanking each other for this opportunity, and then he continues on. So when during this takuhatsu or begging time, I used to hear that word ho, and you know I know it means dharma. Well, getting back with that preamble or background, it occurred to me some years ago that this Dharma-san, based upon the first Zen patriarch and so forth, pear-shaped doll, all red. There's another pear-shaped, all red, garbed figure in American culture, Santa Claus. And what does Santa Claus say? What do we hear all through the winter season here? Ho, ho, ho. Man, I thought that was so neat. We've got an icon of American culture, Santa Claus, proclaiming the good news of the Dharma. And ever since that connection that I made in my mind, whenever I hear Santa Claus on a corner there, or somebody ringing a bell, or Santa Claus saying, ho, 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 it's never been the same. And I think this is a tremendous way of the religious pluralism and diversity and celebration and the creative, you know, really a life force of how we're living here and observing things. Well, and this is something that we all can do in our own way through our own life experiences of experiencing life in the United States and in modern culture here, you know. It's all kind of opportunities. So let your imagination go and your creativity and infuse it with this excitement. and bring the Dharma into your everyday life. One last thing that I had never thought about, but I read about it. It was just a simple sentence in some article. I can't remember where it was, but it was recent. That gave me a pause to think about. And this has to do with, well, Christmas, of course, Christ. And it asked the question, and I'm not going to answer it. I just was kind of floored me when I read this sentence. But the writer said, wondered why the dominant symbol of Christianity is Jesus on the cross, crucifixed. You know, and what that act, why that act became the central focus. Why wasn't the boulder, you know, when he rose to life at Easter time, when the boulder was, that the cave that he was in, the boulder was rolled aside and he ascended, he came back to life. Why wasn't that the major, that resurrection, the major scene? You know, why was, how historically and religiously and doctrinally, why it would seem that resurrection thing would be the major thing. And I said, wow, I never thought about that, but that might be something to think about when we think about the life of Jesus. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. And I'm enjoying all of our Dharma glimpses that are through people's sharing of their lives. This really brings to life the Dharma in everyday life, and is something alive and creates a spirit of creative living Dharma, everyday Dharma. And so I thank everybody for calling in, your kind attention, wishing you a good winter holiday season. Don't let things be too hectic. In the midst of hecticness, keep your calm center. That way you will always have a beautiful day.